We've been talking about, well, we went from Easter to Pentecost, and now we're kind of doing the post-Pentecost stuff, what happened after Pentecost. Because the power of the Holy Spirit was released at Pentecost in really phenomenal ways. And as a result of that, God's, the wonder of God was evident to everyone. It was made tangible. You could see it as much as, we could see the glory on Lynn and Jeff's faces last week, and really more tangible than how Becky's feeling today, that she's just, you know, that there were all these things happening that made a huge difference to folks. They saw a new reality. In the first place, they were able to understand people even though they spoke in a different language. And so it would be like Che coming to church, and instead of hearing all of us speak in English, which she speaks quite well, hearing everybody speak directly to her in her own Filipino language, or anyone else from another country, just hearing in your own tongue what people were saying, even though they were there from all around the world. Again, they were confused and wondered what was going on. But the reality was that they could do something that was a new reality, a new thing that they hadn't seen before. The lame were made whole. They were running, jumping, and praising God. The man that was on the gates of the temple, and when Peter and John said, "We don't have money for you," he's begging, "We don't have money for you, but what we do have, we will give to you," and spoke healing to him, and he was healed, running around, jumping, and praising God. And then, after these events, Peter spoke with power as he named the source and he named this new reality. He named what was going on when people are saying, "What on earth? Who is this? We know this man, but we know him as a lame man that can't walk. And all of a sudden, he's running around, jumping, and doing all these things." And we knew him well enough to know that he hadn't faking it. He hadn't been faking it for his whole life, and this is real now. We know that this is something different. And Peter spoke then and named what had happened, named that he was healed, named that this was the power of God that could come over him and brought a new reality. When you look at Peter back in the Gospels, Peter, we often identify with Peter because he kind of bumbles around. He's a bit of a bull in a china closet. He isn't always have the finesse that, and we can relate to that because usually we feel a little like we're clumsy and we don't always say things quite right. But then to see Peter really in eloquent ways speak in a new way as he names the power of this transformation. This power of God in signs and wonders drew people together. They drew them to gather and to experience for themselves what was happening here. This new miraculous, wonderful thing that was happening in their midst. And the people have gathered together into a new community. We read about this. There's two places, one in Acts 2 and one in Acts 4. I'll read the one in Acts 2, beginning with verse 43. "Awe came upon everyone, because many wonders and signs were being done by the apostles. All who believed were together and had all things in common. They would sell their possessions and goods and distribute the proceeds to all, as any had need. Day by day, as they spent much time together in the temple, they broke bread at home and ate their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having the goodwill of all the people. And day by day, the Lord added to their number those who were being saved." I think I'm really drawn to these words because they sound so wonderful and nice. And I am really tempted to see this as the end product of the Holy Spirit's power being released among us. When the power of the Holy Spirit is released among us, that we'll all become this really tight-knit community and we'll really be there for each other. We'll do all the things that we sometimes in our humanness fail to do. And I think that rather than being we see that as kind of the end result, rather than seeing them as gathered as a people where they could live out the work that they were called to do. That really this passage about being gathered in community isn't the end of the story, it's the beginning of the story. And then we keep reading through the book of Acts as we find people that are learning together what it means to be the people of God together. They are learning both through the good times as well as the hard times. They sometimes get it really right. Really, really right. We see that. We've seen that so far with Peter and John and the healing of this man at the gate that was lame. We've seen it with the power that broke out among the people at the time of Pentecost. But there are also some difficult times, sometimes when the people didn't get it right. We have the story of Ananias and Sapphira, who lie about if money is being held in common, and they sell their land and they keep part of the money. We won't tell anybody. They'll never know how much we really sold it for if we don't tell. And we'll just give part of it, and then we can benefit from this that we have over here for ourselves, because we don't really want to get it all up. And to their peril, they didn't tell the truth. A bit later, we see that the people have a hard time accepting Saul when he turned to Paul. When Saul saw the light and was confronted by Jesus on the road to Damascus and had this incredible life-changing experience, the people didn't trust him. The gathered believers, like, yeah, you've been persecuting us. We're not sure about that. They eventually did, but they struggled to accept the transformation that was real in Paul. The early church really struggled too with Gentiles and what to do about these Gentiles that want to become Christians, and do we let them in or not? Do they have to become Jews first before they can become Christians? Do they have to be circumcised and follow the rituals of our faith as we've always understood it before they can become Christians? Or are they accepted for who they are? And that struggle carries on in multiple facets throughout the book of Acts and even on into the epistles that we read about. Paul and Barnabas were traveling companions, and they did things together until they had a disagreement over whether to include John Mark or not. And they ended up breaking ways and going their separate paths. Now, maybe we always often put a little positive spin on it. Well, we got two sets of evangelizing people out of this, and they're going in different directions. And that's great. But still, there was a conflict between two leaders in the church. This is a group of people just like us trying to figure out how to do this. And we don't always get it right. But God is present with us. God leads us. And God walks with us and gives us way forward on this journey. The people are gathered into community not because they're all friendly and nice and it's their favorite place to be in. It's, I can't wait to get there to see my best friend. And show up in that place on Sunday morning. But the truth is, it's really God who has gathered us together. I dare say that every one of us will say that we got pulled here. Maybe it was through getting to know a person. Maybe it was just because you were drawn to Quakers in general. Maybe it was because you stumbled and walked in the front door. And there's a lot of reasons why we end up here. But we can all kind of trace a something that pulled me to this place that said, come and gather. An early Quaker in 1676 said, Francis Howgill said, the kingdom of heaven did gather us and catch us all as in a net. A real strong sense that we've been gathered together. And we're here because God brought us together. God gathers the willing and the faithful, and God is not at all concerned about what we look like, how polished we are, or all the kind of things that we might assume would be necessary to be a good gathered community of people that worship in a church together. We're a motley crew of people gathered together, wondering what God will make of us. Sometimes we really scratch our heads and go, God, what are you doing here? But we are gathered together, and it's up to God to make something of us. We come as we are, faithful to do our work together. And we trust God to make something of this motley crew of people gathered together. We're actually strengthened by staying together in our diversity. Often when we look at communities tend to be kind of homogeneous, all alike, all pretty much the same. And I think we're actually strengthened by the diversity of community, by being with people that aren't just like me. I remember working for a supervisor in the lab, and when I quit and was moving on, she recognized that I probably would end up in leadership in the next lab, and I did. And she said, you know, when you hire people, don't hire people just like you. You need a wide variety of people in order for it to work well. And I've never forgotten that we need the differences. I need people that are not like me so that we can together be bigger than just my we are all cloned like me. I hate to tell you, this may be pretty boring. So we need each other. We need that diversity. And we need each other to test and to discern our leadings, to figure out how it is that we're to do this work called being the people of God together. We need to be able to come and say, you know, I mean, I think, Becky, your story is a perfect one to come and say, I don't really know what all it means, but I feel happy. I just feel happy. And to offer that, we often want to make you do all the work to put big words around that before you can say that, rather than just offering it. And offering it in community, and we receive it in community, we join you in that, and that is enough. And so we come together with a real sense of accompaniment in all of this, a sense of accompaniment that comes from being with others. And as we've talked about many times, this accompaniment isn't just when we go someplace together as a group, but that when we go individually to different places, we're accompanied by this community that's gathered in this place, because we're intentional that we're not alone. We serve as ministers of North Seattle French Church wherever we go and whatever we do. And we carry this community with us in that process. So yes, we need others to join us on this journey, but there's more than that. We're gathered together so that we can do the work of God. Work which takes all of us to really be able to do it in fullness. No one person can do this work of God. I can't do it all. I am not enough to do all of the work that we're asked to do as a community of faith. But together, we can be faithful and do this work. In this time that we've moved post-Easter in looking at what the instructions were to the people, the disciples, and to the early church and the people that were gathered, we see that Jesus told us what we're to be about, what we're to be doing, what our work is. And it's our calling to do this work. In fact, throughout all of Scripture, we see glimpses from, whether it be Old Testament or New Testament, from the Old Testament says, you know, simply love justice and mercy and do what God has called us to do. To the Gospels, to the Epistles, all throughout Scripture, there are incredible instructions about how we are to be the people of God and how it is that we're to do this work that God has called us to do. So I really think that God has called us together and gathered us in a community because together we do the work of God. And that it isn't just so that we have a warm, fuzzy place to show up on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock. It's because we're gathered to do something. We're gathered because we have purpose in this world. And we need to be connected to others. we need to be able to share that journey with another group of folks so that they can accompany us and so that we can accompany each other. There's this importance of doing this work and doing it together. Sometimes the church has really emphasized the work of evangelism as the work of supreme importance, that we've put that really over other work that we're called to do as a community. In reaction to that sense that evangelism is the thing of supreme importance, we've also de-emphasized evangelism to our detriment. We've kind of put it down. I don't want to be pushy on anybody. I don't want to tell them what they need to do or ought to think or do. And so we've really de-emphasized the place of evangelism in our midst. And I think we really need to let it find its right and natural place. Evangelism is simply sharing the good news. Why wouldn't we want to do that? Folks, we got good news. We join Becky in being happy. We join Lynn and Jeff in this huge healing ministry that happened. Just like the early disciples were naming the wonder of what God was doing in their midst, we get to name the wonder of what God is doing in our midst all the time. It isn't just, 35 years ago. It's very, very current. It is today. It's what God is doing among all of us, every single one of us now, that is important. That is good news, and we don't want to keep it inside. So why has evangelism gotten such a bad rap? I think it's partly because we made it the most important work for everyone to do. I have a friend and a mentor in the first church that I was pastoring in as a seminary student. Steve Wood was the senior pastor and my mentor. And he talked about the gift of evangelism as people with the gift of selling God. So we laugh about the gifted salesperson who can sell ice to an Eskimo. The person who has the gift of selling knows how to sell and knows how to ask for closure on the sale, knows how to get somebody to buy, not just to say this is a good thing, but to actually get people to buy whatever it is that they're selling. The person with the gift of evangelism knows how and when to ask the right kinds of questions. And the person with the gift of evangelism knows when the person is ready for the next steps. Knows when and how to tell them about God, has this sense from God that this person has been singled out, this individual is someone I should talk to, and knows with this intuitive inner sense how to approach that, what to say, how to do that in a way that communicates well to the individual. The problem, as I see it, is that we often have said that everyone should be evangelizing. I remember classes on how to tell people about God, classes on the four spiritual laws, or the I Found It campaign in which you called up people and say, I found it! And they're supposed to say, you found what? I found Jesus! Or Evangelism Explosion and asking people questions. If you were to die tonight, would you know where you were going to go? There's all kinds of programs that were systematic ways of giving a tool to every single individual to know how to share their particular faith journey. It was less about my story. In fact, usually my story was entirely left out of it. It was a mechanistic way of asking somebody if they wanted to be saved and wanted to walk with God. There was emphasis, if you were going to go on a plane ride, fly somewhere, emphasis on talking to the person sitting next to you on the plane. I think partly because, you have a captive audience. Depending on how long your flight is, you have a captive audience and you can... Yeah, right, poor person is right. Yeah, don't get seated next to a Christian. They'll bombard you with their theology and you won't be able to get away. There was even emphasis on going door to door and telling people about how to be a Christian as you went door to door. It got better when we shifted to friendship evangelism and becoming friends with a person and then really sharing your faith in the context of that friendship. But the emphasis was still on soul saved. How many people have been saved? And I think in many senses we kind of shied away from that kind of emphasis and said, that doesn't have the right kind of textures. It isn't telling about the good news. It isn't something I get excited about. It's a duty. Okay, have I done my job that I need to get out and get people saved? Except that I find that I can't get people saved. God does that. I simply can tell my story and let the wonder of God be evident and let God and them work on that. So I might be a catalyst to that process, but I am not the one in charge. So that's really akin to assuming that everybody has the gift of selling something. You know, if we assume that everyone has the gift of selling something, I think that's where we get the result of the stereotype used car salesperson. The stereotype used car salesperson that cares more about getting your money than selling you an automobile with integrity that will really work well for the next couple of years. And, you know, as long as you drive it off the lot and it's functioning, that's good to go. And that we have this kind of picture of the stereotype used car sale. Now, not to say that all used car salespeople are this way by any stretch of the imagination, but the stereotype that is kind of a sleazy person just out to get whatever they can get. I think that's what happens when you make assumptions that everyone has the gift of selling. The truth is, not everyone can sell. Not everyone can do what the next person can do. And a gifted car salesperson, even a gifted used car salesperson, knows how to match your needs, your finances, the kind of car that will fit your body. If you're really tall or if you're really little, there might be really different kinds of things. Your back, all of those pieces that would go together with a car that fits you. So the gifted person knows how to put that together and put it well. And you drive away, yes, this is exactly what I needed and I didn't know how to get. It is the perfect thing. So we recognize that that doesn't work very well when we have this kind of mandate that everybody's supposed to do this. My friend Steve contrasted the gift of selling with being a satisfied customer. And that a satisfied customer simply tells a friend about something that they've discovered that works. A friend just told me about those magic erasers and how cool they are with cleaning things in their house, and described all the stuff that she'd been cleaning with this magic eraser, things that she hadn't cleaned very well before. And suddenly, you know, she wasn't trying to get me to buy a magic eraser. She was just telling me that she'd discovered it. Her mother had given her one and it worked and she liked it. It was a good deal. So in a satisfied customer, there's not really an emphasis on buying the product or closing the sale. They simply talk about the thing that works really well for them. And the contrast with the salesperson who is trying to get another person to buy something. The gifted salesperson know how long to do the pitch, when to ask for the sale, when to move for closure, when to have you sign on the dotted line, and when doing that would be too pushy and you're not ready. The gifted person knows how to walk that with you in a way that honors the other individual. The truth is that some of us have the gift of evangelism, but we're all called to be satisfied customers. As a satisfied customers, we are free to talk about our connection with God. We can talk about it in ways that God is alive in us. We can tell our story. We can just let it bubble out as it is. And it's different than having an agenda, a sense that I have to tell you this so that you can buy the product so that you can get what I'm about. I just get to let it bubble. And you know, there's huge freedom in that. When I have an agenda, if I have to accomplish something and I don't have the gift of knowing how to get that accomplished, because that isn't where the power of God resides in me, then it gets all wackadoo. It gets all sideways. And it actually shuts me up. It doesn't free me. And I think that's what we of the church have done around this idea of evangelism. We've shut people up because if you don't have the gift, you don't know how to do it, and yet you feel like you got this agenda, and so we've just said no. And that has been a mistake, because what we want is just to be authentic people. If God works through you with the gift of evangelism, we want to bless you because we need you to be doing what God has called you to do. For the rest of us, we just want to bubble about life as it is. We want to be able to say, oh, that was good. I really had a good day at church today. Or I just woke up feeling incredibly happy. Or God healed me, and I don't know quite what to do about that, but it's amazing, and I'm a whole new person, and I love God. So whatever it is, we need the freedom to live into the truth of who we are. And we need to honor the gift of evangelism, because we need those with that gift to take their place. So don't discard the power of the gift just because it's been misused, because other people haven't done well, or we may have sensed that there's not something that sets with us well around that. Don't discard the power of the gift. If that's how God works in us, then we need to accept that with open arms. 1 Corinthians 12 talks about the gifts of the Spirit and how they work in us. And in the Message Bible, I love where it says, each person is given something to do that shows who God is. Isn't that cool? We're all given something to do that shows who God is. Every single one of us. We all have work to do, a wide variety of work that includes evangelism. One of the most powerful things that we do is forgiving people. That's what Jesus said in John 20, chapter 23, when he said, forgive the sins of others, and if you don't forgive them, you retain them. And who wants to do that? Not me. Let us forgive with abandon and freedom. Or healing, like in Acts 2, that Peter and John, as they went into the temple, and this man was healed. That's incredible. You know, in all the gifts of the Spirit, these are the ways that the power of God flows through us. When we live in the truth of our giftedness, our spiritual gifts, that's how the power of God flows through of us. When the true gifts are there, there is power that isn't in them otherwise. You think of, I just did the whole evangelism thing when it's really full of the Spirit, how it works and works well versus it being kind of weird and sleazy and not good. Or I think with any of the things, hospitality, people that are just kind of, you know, forcing themselves into a way of being hospitable, and it doesn't have the same power as somebody with a gift of hospitality that makes you just feel loved and welcomed and included into their home and in their family in a way that is enthusiastic and feels good. So there's power when that's our giftedness, when we live into the truth of that. Hospitality, discernment, faith and trust, knowledge, prophecy, wisdom, giving, helps. These are just a few of the spiritual gifts and the way that God's power flows through us. I think the power of God also flows through us in our lived out experiences with God. Jeff and Lynn received healing, and they have spoken then powerful healing to other people. The power of God flows through them because of that healing experience and touches others. Beth, in learning that she didn't have to work afraid, has been given real freedom to tell others that they don't have to work afraid. There's power in that. And I think we sometimes think it's just the common experience that we're drawn to. But I think it's more than that. There is power in how God brings healing and freedom and new life to us that gives us permission to speak that into others. We've been gathered here at North Seattle Friends Church by God, and we have work to do together. We are here for a reason. We are here for a purpose. Sometimes it's collective work that we lock arms and do together. We purpose that we're going to accomplish this together. Sometimes it's individualized work where we go out as kind of the front person with this sense of accompaniment behind us, but in the flesh, in the physical realm, we're the only one out front. But it's all our work to do together. The power of North Seattle Friends Church is that we know God. God is present here in a powerful way. And we know the truth of God's presence among us. We live it, we feel it. It is with us. We listen and we live in this power. And I think that there are people around us that are hungry for this kind of knowing God, this way of relating to God that we just do naturally. That we just are, is what the kind of relationship that people yearn to have with God. So how do we connect with people like that? Well, one way thing is that we trust God to bring them to us, just like we've trusted God to bring every one of us together. But we also do the work that God gives us to do. Most of that work will be out there somewhere. The work of the church is not mostly done inside the church. It's mostly done as we take our ministry and go outside and accompany one another in that sense of going forth. We are faithful, satisfied customers who let God conversation be in all of our lives. That we just let it flow. We don't have to edit it out. And we let God give us the right kind of words in the right kind of situation. We can trust God to do that. We listen in community to what God is saying in our midst. As we're gathered together, we listen together. We open ourselves to what are you saying? What's our next step? And then we live faithfully into the next steps, day by day, step by step. We're going to wait in open worship as we listen in the presence of God and invite God to be present with us and to speak through us as we faithfully take our place at being the people of God, doing the work that God calls us to do, not some other church. We got to let go what we think church is supposed to be about and what the church down the road does. What is God calling us to do? And can we be faithful to live into the truth and the power of that? Let us listen in open worship.